is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. The only thing we have to fear is fear itself.
Today's show is brought to you by Paul's Automotive. Paul's Automotive is located at 634 Route 46 in Kenville, New Jersey. If you want a master mechanic who has over 38 years of experience with quality work, he's your guy to call. He strives to keep you in a safe and reliable vehicle, and his goal is to make your experience as pleasurable and convenient as possible. It's not like you're dropping your car off and you're getting somebody named Joe Blow who's working on your car. Paul's the guy that'll be working on your car, and he gives you a reasonable price. We're proud to say that he's helped Autism Radio many times to keep our vehicle safe and reliable on the road. So he's your guy to give a call today at 973-584-1035. Remember, he's always committed to quality, and he's pleasurable to work with, and he is very helpful. So give him a call today at 973-584-1035. 1035 today.
Welcome back to AutismRadio.org, home of the world's first autism support radio network and proud 501c3 charitable organization, helping families challenged with autism every day get services they desperately need. Please help us make a difference in the autism community and find it in your heart to support 1 in 88 families in America today. Donate directly at AutismDonation.org. Now, stay tuned for a special broadcast of Hope Saves the Day with autism activist, super dad and author of The Spectrum Diet, master chef and the Hope Man himself, your host, Paul Simmons.
Thank you for that great introduction, as always. It's great to be back on another edition of Hope Saves the Day. I'd like to welcome back my co-host, Lynn Glukoff, tonight.
Hi, Paul. How you doing?
Lynn, it's great to have you back on tonight. We have a packed full show tonight. We're going to be talking a little bit about autism myths and misconceptions. Also, we're going to talk about Alice Jordan's wonderful song from the UK, You Won't Hurt Me Anymore, and also our Hope Saves the Day Facebook page about toileting training successes. So we have a lot of stuff coming up. We're really excited to share it with you. Lynn, we're first going to start off with talking about autism myths and misconceptions. You know, as we know, many conditions have a physical or visible symptoms. For example, let's say Down syndrome. A lot of people, you know, of course, this can bring some of its own share of misconceptions as well. But, you know, autism is generally something that affects people internally. And while it's possible for people who are autistic to sometimes recognize another autistic person without having to speak to them, but for the most part, a lot of neurotypical people cannot do this. You know, autistic people can face lots of challenges due to the fact that some people think if something they cannot be seen does not exist. And that's why, you know, it's particularly a myth, which is still, unfortunately, very quite prevalent in today's day and age and can be very detrimental to a lot of autistic people. And like one of the phrases, I hate to say it, but it's like it has to be seen to be believed. And that's, you know, many people's attitudes today. And unfortunately, it represents a lot of attitudes in today's society. You know, it's a similar way in a lot of ways to discriminate against people with mental health issues that they face. And you know, autistic people a lot of times are often regarded with extreme suspicion due to the fact that their particular condition cannot be seen by other than ways that they can express themselves. And like whether this is, you know, in the day-to-day to life, let's give an example here. Like people that are having to deal with people saying autism doesn't exist and that the traits of it are simply a bad behavior, or even applying for things such as benefits and being regarded with the utmost suspicion by whoever is interviewing these people, because people can't tell if someone has autism by looking at them, and they can't make allowances for people's behaviors or the way that they're expressing themselves unless an autistic individual specifically goes and tells them that they are autistic, or the parents tell them, you know, and that's a big problem.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, I'm noticing as Michael, I've almost always have had positive experiences with Michael, with the general public, and as he's getting older now, the harder I'm having a harder time because when we go out in public, which we do a lot, and I try to expose him as much to as many things as I can, he seems typical in the way he acts. He's very quiet. He'll stand by my side. He doesn't run off like a little kid. You know, he's very well behaved. And then all of a sudden, he'll let out a screech or do something completely inappropriate, and someone will be like, "Hey," or you know, he's touching somebody when I'm not looking. And it's sort of out of nowhere. So people think, you know, they're like, why is he acting this? You know, they don't understand that there's something wrong with him. I usually have to say, I'm so sorry, you know, he's disabled or, you know, he has autism or whatever. So it is very difficult as they get older even, because when they're younger, you know, it's kind of cute or people expect that they're going to, you know, misbehave maybe and not listen to mommy or run away or whatever. But as they get older, you know, and then people are – It's just hard sometimes to tell. I mean, if you look at Michael, you really wouldn't think there's anything wrong with him.
Right.
You know,
right.
That.
No, it's true. And it goes the same thing, you know, like my son Jonathan, you know, and a lot of times people are being constantly told that they don't look autistic. I love that one.
Yeah, and that's a lot of people to tell me that's a pet peeve. Yeah.
You know, and then while a lot of the neurotypical people, you know, may well mean this as a compliment, it's actually extremely offensive, and it simply means that this person unfortunately does not conform to the stereotype that, you know, this person that's speaking the word has in their head. And if the word autistic is substituted for any other word that describes any particular group in society, the true offensive impact will be seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if people believe that autism does not have a physical trait, then itself may not be harmful to autistic people, and the people can be corrected and realize their error of their ways, and being more informed from it.
The thing that I always say is there's no, even though there are, you know, the majority are boys, you have to realize there are girls that have it, and they're a small minority, but there definitely are girls out there with it. There's all races, there's all religions, there's all, it doesn't, at any economical status. I mean, it crosses all barriers. So, you know, people should be aware of that as well. You know, it can happen to anybody, which we're all in the same boat. You know, it's a disability, and it's all over the world, and getting bigger, as we all know. So.
Yeah, I've actually had people, and you probably wouldn't, you know, I don't know what you have done, but I've had people actually say things to me like, you know, things like, they claim autism does not exist because it can't be seen. Like, you know,
I've never had that. No.
You know, it's crazy because that, you know, obviously someone with that kind of viewpoint can be tremendously harmful for autistic people and many families. And especially if you go in some of the Midwest states, there's a very different mentality about a lot of this stuff than here on the East Coast.
I would be very offended by that.
Yeah.
I mean, that it doesn't exist. I mean,
and that's the real thing, is that, you know, at least because, you know, this insults the parents and, you know, and basically it's like they're insulting the parents' ability to raise children. And, you know, it's terrible, you know. And that's why the myth that autism has some kind of physical symptoms or feature needs to be debunked. I mean, that's the important thing here, to get that message across.
The other thing I usually, when I used to give, when I give speeches at the preschools, or when I talk about, when I've had a couple of lectures about autism, one of my pet peeves about autism is that a lot of people think it's just a speech, you know, delay, or this was, of course, when he was younger. I think people know more now, but a lot of it is the processing of the language, so they may not understand you. And I think people, my son especially, has a very bad, it's very severe in his case, his auditory processing problem. So it's not only a matter of him not being able to speak, but it's also a matter of him not being able to understand even me. So it took me years to even understand that he had no clue what I was saying, and he still has a very limited ability to understand what you're saying. So people need to know the facts. You know, they can't. I've had doctors say to me, "Oh, what are you talking about? He doesn't understand me. He understands me perfectly." And I'm like, "Look, I know my son. He doesn't know what you're saying." I had to argue with a doctor once about that.
Right.
So, you know, I think, like I said, we had a show about the professionals, but, you know, that's just a huge area that people need to be aware of. It affects the whole neurological system. I mean, their motor planning, their coordination, all of those It's the whole neurological body. It took me years to explain it to my family, to my friends. People don't get it. You know, it's not, it comes from the brain. I mean, it's not a speech delay. It's not just a speech delay.
Right. I mean, there's just such a lack of understanding, and people have fear of these things, that anything that takes place completely in the mind and the brain, such as like autism, Alzheimer's, dementia, mm-hmm. learning disabilities, people that have mental illnesses, you know, there's such a lack of understanding and a fear that can create so many day-to-day problems in the lives of people who live with these issues or the differences. And just simply increasing the understanding and the awareness could really help so many people and make the world easier for the people, especially with autism to live in. I mean, that's a really important message.
Very, very important. Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, hopefully, you know, like our program that we do here, you know, hopefully get some awareness out to other communities. Like I said, you know, we're on many different FM stations out there. And a lot of people that don't have autistic children do listen to our show and have learned a lot from us over the years, which is a good thing. So we want to get away from a lot of stigmas, and we want to really help the autism community as a whole. So hopefully, you know, we're on our way to a better world, especially understanding autism and making it easier for individuals with autism as adults, teenagers, and then parents that are raising children with autism,
right.
You know, making their lives easier. But Lynn, I want to get on to this other topic because we got a lot of stuff to talk about. This wonderful, wonderful young lady, her name is Alice Jordan. She's from the UK, and she wrote this beautiful song called "You Won't Hurt Me Anymore," which deals with the issues of bullying and torment that she suffered before her diagnosis with autism. And she actually was not diagnosed till later in life. She was age 11.
Mm.
And since then, now she's a, you know, in her late teenage years, she has made such an improvement in her life. And she started working with a creative DreamWorks that produces songs, and they said nothing but wonderful things about how she's such a gifted singer and songwriter, and she performed in front of her entire school, and she can actually sing a cappella beautiful. She plays guitar, piano, and she's inspired so many people and her friends to write songs and develop them. And she actually was on a show in the UK called Autism's Got Talent. And it was actually last May, it was May 10th, at the Mermaid Theatre in London. And there was thousands and thousands of people there.
Oh,
and
wow.
She performed this song. And we're going to be sure to get this song up on the website so you guys can listen to it here in the US. Because like I said, this song was released out in the UK. And it also, she doesn't have it available on iTunes just yet, but she's working on that. And as soon as it is, we'll definitely let people know about it. But it is a beautiful song, and I think it sends a big message to anybody out there who's either being picked on or is a bully themselves. And I think it's important that, you know, we really separate that stigma and really kiss bullying goodbye today, because there's no place in this world for that, and there's no reason for it.
That's a huge problem for the higher functioning. I know I'm always talking about the severe side, but for the higher functioning kids, or for the kids that are sort of moderate to higher that are being mainstream with the typical kids, I mean, that's a huge issue for them. And it must be really, really hard to be in between both worlds. People connect, you know, have to be accepted in the typical world, and yet, you know, also have friends that are similar to you. And it's hard. It's hard to find that balance, I'm sure, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we're going to be sure that we let everybody know about it. She also has a lot of YouTube videos if people want to go to YouTube. She sung The Power of Love. She has the song The Climb, which was a Miley Cyrus song that was out there back in, I guess it was, I don't even know the year, but it was 2000, and I want to say 2009 or something like that. The song came out.
I love that song.
So it is a beautiful song, and it's funny. I actually, when a song first came out very early on with Hope Saves the Day, we actually played a little part of the song. It's just, you know, it's kind of like a song about life, how climbing, you know, and it's just very interesting how that song relates to life. And it really, for me, even though I'm not a huge Miley Cyrus fan, but that song, it spoke volumes to me. It really meant a lot in my life, and how my life has gone a journey, how, you know, sometimes you got to climb a mountain, you know, to overcome something. And
it's so funny because I very rarely sing it now, but when he was little, I used to sing Climb Every Mountain to Michael from The Sound of Music. And I never, my sister sang it in the show, in her high school show. She has a great voice, my sister, if she's listening to this. But anyway, I never realized what the words meant until I started singing it to him. And I'm like, wow, this is a really inspirational song. Like, climb every mountain, don't let things get in your way, just keep going, you know. And I never really liked this song when I was younger. But anyway, that just reminds me. It's the same type of...
Yeah, I mean, funny. Sometimes you hear a song, you're like, oh, I don't like this song. But then if you actually take the lyrics and break them down and read them, it's like, wow, this song actually has a lot of meaning, a lot of feeling to it. And that's, as I've gotten older in my life, I really look for songs and lyrics that really pull the heartstrings and really have, you know, something that I can connect with at a level. So definitely this song, You Won't Hurt Me Anymore, really connected with me when I first heard it.
I can't wait to hear it.
So it's a beautiful song, and we'll definitely have the YouTube video up on the autismradio.org's website. So we'll be sure to share that with you. But I know, Lynn, we got a lot more to talk about here. This is coming off our Hope Saves the Day Facebook page, which definitely go to Facebook and ask to join our private club, Hope Saves the Day, which is our radio show Facebook fan page. And basically, we had a topic of the week, Lynn, and this is also a little bit of a messy topic sometimes, but in this flip side, but seriously, these are wonderful success stories of toilet training for individuals with the autism community. So Lynn, take it away and start us off with the first ones.
We had started the Hope Saves the Day page, and I said I wanted to hear, basically the page, just to explain to our listeners, is for successful everyday stories that inspire people. We want to really focus on the positives of the journey to inspire people and see what people have gone through. And I always encourage people, if I hear something, please share it on our Hope Saves the Day page, and which I told people, and eventually we will hopefully, Paul, go down and just everyday little things that really get you excited. So anyway, I thought toileting was a huge topic. As a blogger, it's like one of the most common questions I get. So I will start by telling my story quickly. My son's very severe and was toilet trained at 9 years old. We never thought that he would get trained. We were trying from the time he was 3. I say this to give people hope who are struggling with toilet training, because I've been there and I think it's a huge hurdle to get over. Any story will do. Here at Hope Saves the Day, we know that even neurotypical people think that they're no big deal. These moments are no big deal for us, but for us, they're monumental. So we want to inspire others. And thank you for joining us on this journey. Please feel free to share your stories. And this is what I got back from some of our readers. My son is low functioning. He just turned 7 last month. He was potty trained at 5 years old. I also thought he was never going to be potty trained. It was difficult to potty train him, but I did. At times I wanted to give up, but I kept pushing myself to continue. My son is 12 and has been potty trained for about a year now. We struggled for so long, and then suddenly one day it was like he just got it. My son is low functioning, 12 years old. This is another person. My son is functioning, a low functioning 12 year old. Miraculously, he was trained at about 10 and a half. We are only time trained and urine only, but I will take it. We will continue to work on regulating his bowels and his constipation issues. My son, next person, who is also severe, was toilet trained during the day at age 7, and at night, at 8, I found that it was just a case of waiting until he seemed ready and then working really hard for a couple of weeks with him. Once he got the idea, that was it. No accidents since. But it has been the same with other things too. Once he grasps an idea, he has it and he is great with it. My son, next person, was toilet trained around 9 and 10, but only during the day. At night, I would have to put a diaper on him. When he was 13 and a half, I decided at night to wake him up every couple of hours to make him go to the bathroom. And an hour before bed, no liquid for him. I didn't sleep that much for at least a month, but he's 16 and now fully trained. Now all I have to work on is wiping, you know, the himself after he has a bowel movement. This is the same person. He is always drinking water, and he would always sign to me that he wants water to drink. If I do give him some, I would give him very little. And I do use baby wipes to wipe him, and I try to let him wipe himself, but he comes to me anyway. I am not giving up. Whenever I think I am getting nowhere, he proves me wrong and makes me so proud. That's actually a good friend of mine, Yvonne. She's an awesome lady. Her son's name is Michael, too. My last one is, my daughter was toilet trained at the age of 3. Quite a feat. We used pictures on the walls of all the bathrooms in our home. Kid-friendly pictures, one step at a time for toilet training, as well as using a video that was available at this time. And that's the end, but I guess we just wanted to give people hope because I know I've been there as a parent, and for me it was a huge, huge hurdle that we thought, my husband and I thought we would never, ever see the day that he would go to the bathroom on his own, and he did get there. I mean, it was 5-6 years of hell, but he did get there, so...
Yeah.
And some of these people, look, their kids are even older, and they do get trained. So
yeah, well,
give up.
I know, Lynn, I know exactly how you feel. Jonathan was almost 10 before he was out of diapers. He was almost 10 years old. It was literally right before his 10th birthday, the first time he used the potty on his own. We were like, we never thought this was going to happen. And, you know, you went through it, and I went through the disasters of cleaning up mess after mess after mess.
I mean, I did too.
The sheets. I mean, I literally could have owned a sheet store and mattress store because we had to throw out his first mattress because it was just so destroyed. It was just a nightmare. And then and on top of it, he used to take his hands and stick his hands in a diaper with poops and then wipe it all over everything.
Not as much with Michael, but...
Oh, my God. He did that all the time. I mean, if I had a dollar for every time that happened, I'd be a multimillionaire by now.
Yeah.
I mean, it was that bad. So, and I remember those days.
Yeah, very few times.
And so, you know, I could just imagine for these parents that have gone through a lot of those things and to finally have some excitement where they're using a bathroom is huge. Oh, my God. It's so huge. I can't even put it into words how big of a deal it was.
It's unbelievable. We actually had cameras at one point because we had we used to let Michael go downstairs by himself when we lived in a condo. And my husband had set up cameras all over the house because whenever he was down there by himself, he'd have an accident or we'd have to watch him and, you know, make sure he goes or whatever. And, I mean, it was just constant watching him until he got it, you know, and keep telling him, Michael, get to the bathroom. Michael, go to the bathroom. And it was hell. I mean, and even to get, you know, the baby, I felt bad for the babysitters even because my family, we never had family watching him. We always had babysitters. So we had these fantastic people, luckily, but... you know, it's a lot of work. I mean, it's just so much work. You know, you just think you're never going to get through it. Michael is still not trained at night. I don't know. You said Jonathan is, I guess.
Yeah, he is. He doesn't, knock wood, he hasn't had any accidents in about 2.5 years, so.
Yeah, we still have that issue with Michael at night, so I do laundry quite a bit, and he won't wear a diaper. So, because he's so big and he just doesn't like the feel of it. So it's like almost like he's ready, but he's not ready, but he still sleeps through it.
Yeah, he's actually, Jonathan's been awesome this year.
Yeah.
He gets up, he goes to the bathroom first thing when he wakes up. I mean,
we
used to have to like force him to go to the bathroom like last year. And like, you know, before school now, he goes by himself. There's no problems.
Right.
You know, because he used to hold it for extended periods of time, too.
Yeah, I've
and then every once in a while you'd have an accident, you know. But I got to say, like in about a year, he hasn't, knockwood, has not had one accident. So
that's great. Yeah.
It's been really good. So it's such a relief.
The bedwetting issue for us has been almost 2 years now, I think, that we stopped using diapers. And I thought, you know, he would, but I, I'm not giving up hope, you know.
No, definitely not.
And I know there have been some days where he wakes up dry, and I don't know why or what, you know. I'm like, boy, this is nice just to have a day that he wakes up dry.
Right,
but I think he wakes up at night when he gets wet, so he does have some awareness of it.
Right, right.
Because he's on sleep medication, so whatever. But, you know, we're working on it. I think eventually one day it'll just click, just like anything else. It might just take him longer.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, getting off of some of the medicines. I don't know, you know, what it's going to take, but... I don't want to put him back in diapers because I know he doesn't.
No, I think there's a certain pride issue now. They're getting older boys, and you know they know they don't want these things.
No, he doesn't want it. He doesn't want it.
And I can tell. Like, you know, my son wants to watch more grown-up programs now.
He likes, that's great.
And I can just see the differences. I mean, he still likes his cartoons, but every once in a while he wants to watch something because he'll grab the remote out of my hand because I want to put on a cartoon. He wants to put on something regular on TV to watch, not just a cartoon. So he's understanding a lot of different concepts. So I got to be real careful what I put on TV nowadays.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So especially, you know, Michael's funny like that. They kind of argue. He can't argue with his sister who's younger, but he'll sit there and he'll like carry on. And go, and he'll like try to grab the remote, like to change it to his, you know, his shows that he likes to watch.
Right.
He won't watch her show. He doesn't like her show.
Yeah, oh, that's too funny.
So it's kind of funny. It's almost like a typical.
Yeah, that's a normal brother and sister behavior, you know, or
right,
you know, siblings.
Now, Michael, you have to wait, you know, and it's kind of cute, you know.
No, it is.
He's asserting himself.
That's actually a good thing. Like when you see those things, you know, normally, you know, most parents complain about those things, but for us to see that kind of behavior kind of puts a smile on our face, and we said, you know, there's some normalcy there, and that's an exciting feeling.
It's funny because when my parents came in, my grandparents, the grandparents, who's the only grandparents we have, paid attention to Amanda, Michael started crying and he wanted attention. And my father was like, wow, that's great. Look how he knows. I said, he knows. I mean, he wants attention too. You
They're
know?
Aware. They're totally aware.
You know, like people think because they have autism, they don't have these typical feelings, but they do. They feel everything that we feel. They can't express it all the time.
Right.
But
well, that's
I mean,
that's the big thing. They don't know how to communicate to us, and they're not able to.
Thing. You know, they do. They have all those feelings, and it's locked inside sometimes.
Absolutely.
And they can't express it. So.
Yep. Just like, you know, one of the things when I wrote the Hope Saves the Day song, that was, you know, like a tear trapped inside. I always say that. You know, they can't get out their expression. So, but we want to thank all our listeners, as always, Lynn, for participating in our Hope Saves the Day Facebook page, because that definitely adds another dimension of excitement and insight to what parents are going through with their, you know, child with autism. So it's great that they're sharing that, and you know, continue to supporting our page, and go to our Facebook page and like us on Autism Radio, as well as join us on the Hope Saves the Day page, which is definitely expanding, and a lot of topics are going on, a lot of conversation, which is great for the autism community because you're helping each other.
It's all levels. I just want to make it clear. It's all levels of the spectrum. It's adults on the spectrum. Anybody who has any dealings with autism at all is welcome to join.
Absolutely.
You know, that's
because
what we want any perspective.
We don't want to keep anybody away. We're all one big, happy community together.
Exactly.
So, and that's always one thing we always strive for here on Hope Saves the Day.
Right.
But we'd like to thank everyone again. Lynn, thanks for joining me. And we want to thank all our listeners for the continued support here on the program on Hope Saves the Day. And I'd like to wish everyone a great week. And remember, until next time, Hope Saves the Day. Good night, everyone.
Every time I see your smile, I wonder what you feel. Every time you laugh or cry, I wonder if it's real. You seem trapped inside. Please help me understand, what is your world like? I want to feel your love. I want to know what it's like to laugh and play. Imagine a thought that you cannot feel, a tear trapped inside. Imagine a sound that you cannot make, no matter how hard you try. I want you to know how I'm feeling. I want you to know how it feels to be me. I wish you could look into my world and see how I see. Hold my hand and remind me to hold on to hope each day. Let this song be my voice. And remember, hope saves the day. I want to show you what I see. What kind of life will I have? What's in store for me? Don't be afraid, just love and hold me. I can be all that I can be. With your love I can do anything. With your love I can see the world. Like rays of light shine upon me, inside of me, yeah. Then you are right by my side. I will love you till the end of time. Hold my hand and remind me to hold on to hope each day. Let this song be my voice, and remember, hope saves the day.